My name is Mike Rowe, and this is my job.
I explore the country looking for people who aren't afraid to get dirty.
Oh!
A hunk of just flew straight down my throat.
Hard-working men and women who earn an honest living doing the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us.
Now get ready to get dirty.
Coming up on Dirty Jobs, I get fired up to learn the art of chimney sweeping.
He's running for his life and you're laughing like it's a work of art.
Then I search for the rarest trees on earth in the murky depths of these frigid waters.
We're in the 21st century, man. This is the best you can do.
And later, get out your umbrellas. It's raining scrap metal.
Full of people spit, everything that could be in a can.
Oh, man. Dog, got it.
Oh, God.
Downtown Indianapolis, beautiful place to live and a fine place to call home. The Hoosier State, crossroads of America, home of the Indianapolis 500, the Brickyard 400, largest children's museum in the nation is right here in Indianapolis. Of course, this is also home to the Chimney Safety Institute of America. It's true, if you want to sweep chimneys and if you want to do it right, you got to get certified. And if you want to be a certified chimney sweep, you've got to come to Indianapolis. That's why I'm here. It's a dirty job. It's got to get done. And I'll do it if I can find the place. Do you know where the Chimney Safety Institute of America is?
No, I don't know.
Chimney Safety Institute?
Yeah.
No, sir.
You guys ever hear of the Chimney Safety Institute of America?
No, I have not.
Apparently, the Institute is on the outskirts of Indianapolis. In Plainfield. Should be easy to find.
Looking for the Chimney Sweep Museum Institute thing?
Never heard of it.
You guys heard of it? Chimney?
Oh, I've lived here for years. I've never heard of it.
This is where all the certified chimney sweeps go to learn how to be chimney sweeps.
Mississippi Institute.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't let me ask
you. Don't know outside?
Yeah, okay. Maybe.
They tell me the Chimney Sweep Institute has been here in Plainfield for nearly 5 years. Just don't tell the residents that. They've never heard of it.
It's going to be right on the right side. See, a big chimney out in front of it.
See? Chimneys. All right. Thanks very much. Right at the stop, look for the chimney. We got a lead. I think we're getting close. Very exciting. Feel good about it. We're going to find this place. Here we go. There it is. All right, I think we are here. And are you Peter?
No, I'm Ashley. How do you do, Mike?
Ashley, pleasure to meet you.
Here's my business card. Let me take you inside. Class has already started.
Your name's really Ashley?
It really is.
Seriously?
Seriously.
You didn't change it just to be kind of a funny chimney?
Just a coincidence. I have a respirator and some glasses for you. And I have this full zoot suit here.
I sensed immediately that these guys were going to be serious about dirt.
This goes on top of your nose.
Because my nose is above my mouth. Of course, man. That's good tip, Pete. Thanks.
You'll come up in here and you will get what we call a scrubbing action.
A lot of people think they only need to wear the respirator down below where the stuff's falling. But in fact, if you go to the top and you're doing this work, the draft coming up the flue is bringing that dust right to you.
If you want to become a chimney sweep, the first thing you need to learn,
like a chimney chandelier,
are the tools of the trade.
One of the best ways to illuminate the interior of the flue is just to reflect sunlight right down the chimney.
You see, there's a wheel on the end of that brush. It's that first push that takes a little strength. This is like almost like a weed whacker.
This method is used to recover creosote from the chimney. You don't want to open that up without your respirator on.
Okay.
Oh, jeez!
After you've mastered the tools, cleaning the chimney is easy. Sort of.
Okay.
Every certified chimney sweep needs to be aware of the dangers of chimney fires caused by the buildup of creosote on the inner walls of the flue.
Do you hear that noise? It sounds like one of those airplanes going over.
Like it's about to explode?
Yeah, that's what it is.
And that's because this sort of creosote...
That's right.
...is inside here, and it's on fire.
Right. Every one of those pops that you hear is the tile breaking. You hear that?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, my goodness.
When you say, oh, my goodness, that's generally a bad sign.
Yeah. Ashley is going to ignite the gases created by the burning creosote.
You guys basically at heart are just a couple of pyromaniacs, aren't you?
Yeah. Amen.
So what's the class learning right now?
We're learning how Ashley lost his hair.
Besides having fun playing with fire, the class is learning why the job of a chimney sweep is important. Because fires don't occur inside clean chimneys.
Your people are dangerous. He's running for his life, and you're laughing like it's a work of art.
Oh,
it's beautiful, Peter.
That's a beautiful fire. Sorry,
oh, yeah.
I can't join you.
Hey, you're getting a lot of funky stuff.
Yeah. Oh, no, don't get in there. I don't want to.
This.
Armed with knowledge and driven by a clear sense of purpose burning inside me, I ventured out into the field to put my skills to the test.
Right.
That's good.
All right, Pete, it's all coming back to me. Starting to look familiar.
All right. Tell you what, Mike, this is going to be your test, bud. I put the vacuum on the ready.
Uh-huh.
I got you a light and a brush that'll do what you need to do. I'm not going to tell you anything. You go do it.
Let me take a peek at things.
You were listening, weren't you?
I was doing my best.
All right. Looks like you did okay.
All right. That's what I'm shooting for.
All right.
Okay.
I've already taken the screws out of the top here, so all we got to do is lift it off, and then we'll look down inside and see what kind of cleaning job you did.
Okay. This is where the
this is your test,
in.
Huh?
Sure.
I think you did a real good job, guy.
Well, I feel darn proud, Pete.
Should. You should.
Hello?
Yeah.
Luke.
When it talks back.
I'm your father. Right.
When it talks back, watch out.
Nice. Yeah, what are you going to do? Great.
And so it was on to the next customer. Thorough cleaning and inspection usually takes 30 to 60 minutes and averages about $100. During peak season, a chimney sweep can clean out about 7 chimneys a day. It's pretty good money, but not enough to lure me away from the glamour of showbiz.
Oh, yeah, that's clean. Sure, you can eat right off that for sure.
All right, we'll come back here for lunch.
Coming up.
Yeah, years of experience has told me this dirty.
You're already getting the hang of this, Mike.
Then, I'm a lumberjack, and I'm not okay.
Slow growth, virgin timber.
Hey, look, man, you know what? You had me with slow growing virgins.
And later, I shake things up down at the scrapyard.
I'm familiar with this.
Wait.
So far, chimney sweeping is not what I read about. I don't see any top hats. I don't see any kids. I don't see any big, giant, colonial brick chimneys. I just see a lot of houses here in Indiana that look pretty much the same. And a lot of dirty fireplaces. Yeah, years of experience has told me this is dirty. Dirty chimney.
If you use your fireplace in the winter months, your chimney ought to be swept and inspected at least once a year. But don't wait for the experts. You can do your own inspection of your chimney. ideally once a month. Remember, creosote buildup, never good.
You ought to get the hang of this, Mike. You don't need to be told anymore.
I've been watching.
Now, as you can see, yes, it's still dirty, but it'll never be clean. We don't clean chimneys, we sweep them.
Right. That's good. We don't clean them, we sweep. Well, Pete?
We're finished with this, so what do you think of what we do for a living?
I think, I was expecting the big top hat, and I got a respirator instead, so times change.
Times do change, they certainly do.
But it's still a dirty job.
Absolutely a dirty job.
Well, there it is, folks. Chimney sweeping in Indiana. It's a dirty job, it's a hot job, it's got to get done. The good news is, I don't have to do it anymore.
There are not too many places left in the world where an honest lumberjack can legally harvest a 1,000-year-old tree. But Midland, Ontario is not like most places. And these guys are not like most lumberjacks.
When they told me I was coming to Ontario, Canada to do a dirty job on logging, I figured I'd be up there in the woods with a bunch of lumberjacks. I was wrong. I'm out here on a boat instead with a bunch of treasure hunters. This is Scott. This is Bob. Thank you, Bob. And Scott and I are going to dive into the water here because why are we doing this again?
Well, it's treasure. This wood was cut 140 years ago. Before it could get up into the mills, a certain percentage would sink every year before they could get it up and cut it.
Well, what makes it worth dressing up like this and going after?
Because that cold water down there preserved it so nicely, and it's slow growth, virgin timber that just doesn't grow anymore. It's an
interesting. Hey, look, man, you know what? You had me with slow growing virgins. Let's go take a look.
Okay.
The water was not only cold, it was murky, and I was blind as a bat. Fortunately, bats have sonar, and so do we. Once we found the timber, the job was pretty straightforward. Fasten 1-inch eye bolts into the logs and haul them up. The work, not too dirty, just difficult, dangerous, and exhausting. But that rubber suit, that's going to need a dry cleaning.
Come on, you're going to have to put a bit of muscle into that, Mike. Good. Okay, we'll wait for your line at the surface now. Let it go. Good job. You're clear to make your ascent to the surface.
That was the first.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Just pull your head out. Yeah, it's definitely not very comfortable.
No.
So typically, the actual work, we slip into something more comfortable. What's this?
I'm not greasing you up.
You're greasing me up. Your hands
slick.
Are so soft. Oh, yeah, look at that.
Right?
Man, you guys have a trick for everything.
No one knows exactly how many sunken logs there are at the bottom of this waterway. Today, we're fishing for six.
So this is the crew, Dave, Rob, and Chris over here. Dave, the job now is pretty straightforward, I guess. We got to get the logs
onto the boat.
Onto the boat. What happens here?
We use that when we haul the logs up. They're neutrally buoyant in the water. We get them to the surface, and we'll hook these suckers on there, grab on, and we use the chainfall to pull it up.
We're in the 21st century, man. This is the best you can do?
Hey, they work good.
That little bit of line is going to pull that great big log?
That little bit of line is going to pull that great big log. Well, you ready for your first log to come to surface?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Underwater logging. It's one of those jobs my career counselor never told me about, and here it is. These guys are doing it every day.
Man, that thing really grabs onto it.
Say, they're old, but they work well.
Look at that. That's incredible.
You look at the softwoods and hardwoods of today, and they don't have nearly as many rings as one of these things will.
It's a lot of rings. So you figure 150 years it's been lying there on the bottom of this thing.
And that's the condition they all are.
Why don't they rot? I still don't understand.
Oh, lack of oxygen, the cold waters of Georgian Bay.
You like the looks of this one, Dave?
This is the gold.
Wow, this one looks different than the others.
Yep, this is maple?
This looks like a curly maple, actually.
Yeah, looks like a curly maple.
Let's get it. We'll look at it once we get it on deck.
All right.
Yeah, we don't want to lose her now that we got her.
No, it's been lost for 200 years.
Yeah. We can take these eye bolts out.
The eye bolts, the ones I worked so hard to get in, now we're going to take them out.
The ones you work so hard to get in, you got to take them out.
At the end of the day, we head back to the shore to unload the waterlogged timber. From here, these 1,000-pound logs are lifted by crane and transported to the mill for cutting and drying.
So after 200 years of lying peacefully at the bottom of the bay, the timber is once again on the move. It's been uprooted again, and now it's finally on its way to the mill.
Coming up, down at the mill, sawing logs does not mean sleeping on the job.
It's been in water for 200 years. How much more water does it need?
And so the wood we pulled from the bottom of the bay today is one step closer to becoming an elegant china cabinet, or maybe some tasteful hardwood floors, or perhaps the striking desk of an overpaid network executive. Either way, it has a few more steps to go before any of that can happen. It needs to be milled. That goes on over there. Then it needs to be dried out. That happens in the kiln, which is over there. And back here in the silo, nothing happens at all. That's just for show. So, Pete, this is the mill, huh?
This is the mill.
I like what you've done with the place.
Beautiful.
It's my first time in a mill, to be honest with you. Man, what in the heck are these things?
Those are squared white oak timbers recovered from the St. Lawrence River. Pre-war of 1812. These would have been destined for England for the Royal Fleet. If you want to do an authentic job, you got to come here because this is the authentic product.
What's this stuff?
This is birch. These will be 450 to 600-year-old logs.
Son of a birch. How are you?
Not too bad. How are yourself, man?
You remember Dave. He's going to turn... What are you going to do here? This is where the actual milling happens, right?
This is where the milling happens, and I'm not going to do anything. You are.
Well, all right, then. Perhaps you can instruct me, at least in a perfunctory way.
I can give you a little hand here.
All right, good. This is the support. Oh, that's quite a sound that makes.
You like that?
I do. Yeah, that's a good one. This would be the gentle part.
This is the gentle part right there.
All right.
Mike, we got the controls to turn the log, clamp it in place.
Right.
The market value of one of these logs is between $7,000 and $8,000. So every cut of this timber must be precise.
All right, Mike, stop. Perfect, right there. You got her.
All right.
All right, we'll get that blade spinning. Lots of water. That'll help keep the noise down. Get rid of the lubricate the blade.
Believe it or not, from this one log, they'll make about 36 pieces of furniture. They do that by cutting the logs into paper-thin slices of veneer. They'll get about 75 to 100 sheets from this one log. Then they glue the veneer onto substrate, making the most out of this rare wood.
Man. It's like the moment of truth there, right?
It is. We get to see what you've done.
Actually, this is beautiful wood, though, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, this log here is a beech log.
Now, what are you doing at this point, Pete?
Add a little bit of water to this.
It's been in water for 200 years. How much more water does it need?
Well, it brings out the grain so you can really see what you're getting into when you're cutting your logs. You couldn't stain a board like this by hand. No matter how hard you tried, it always mute into the next sort of layer, the next growth ring. Can't get it anywhere.
Well, you can get it here.
This is the only place.
So this is your basic giant vacuum kiln.
Radio frequency. Ooh. This enables us to dry our wood virtually defect-free 16 times faster than conventional kilns.
So basically, you've got state-of-the-art technology for drying your wood with the kiln. You got state-of-the-art technology to find the wood with the side-sweeping sonar.
Correct.
And all of this is being directed toward a fairly ancient medium, these old timbers.
That's correct.
Do you see the dichotomy, Pete?
Old meets new.
Now, is there some automated device that allows us to go in, or do we rely on good old-fashioned?
There sure is. His name's Dave and Chris and Bob.
Dave, Chris, and Bob, hit it.
So the real lesson here, Pete, is that technology notwithstanding, everybody should just have a bunch of guys standing around to push things for them.
That's right.
When push comes to shove.
When push comes to shove, that's right.
No substitute for elbow grease in the end. So the wood is in the kiln, the door closes like so. You flip a switch, and the next thing you know, you're drying out your wood. You guys basically do everything but make the furniture.
Absolutely.
Who does that?
We leave that to the experts.
Nova Day is Latin. I don't know what it means. I do know that they make some pretty incredible furniture, though, and they buy a lot of their woods from our buddies at Georgian Bay Wetwoods. Well, our timber has been through the ringer, more specifically, through the mill several times over. This is one of the logs that we found, and as you can see, it's been cut into these paper-thin pieces. This essentially is the veneer, right?
Yes, sir.
This is Brent, and we're going to take a piece of this very, very thin cherry, in this case, and we're going to affix it to some substrate?
Yes.
Which is a fancy term for?
Particle board.
See? I'm getting my terms straight. To the glue spreader. And this is just tons of glue just squirted right in here.
Yeah, it's just typical white glue.
Round and round it goes.
Yep.
Essentially, this is all going to get jammed together, and
yeah.
The veneer is going to begin the adhesion process.
Yep, puts pressure and heat at the same time.
Pressure and heat. I'm familiar with both. All right, there must be a switch or something you flick, right?
Yes, sir.
There's always a switch.
Coming up, the old logs become new furniture.
No sustain come out of clothes, okay?
No.
Then, a magnetic personality can only take you so far in the scrapyard.
Wow.
It can be a little touchy.
You're not kidding.
Adhering the veneer to the substrate takes 3,000 pounds of pressure and 200 degrees of heat. This is Tim. He'll show us the next step in the furniture making process.
So this is basically a router.
It is. It's a computerized router.
So you tell this computer what to do, and this machine does it?
Basically, yeah. That's about all it takes.
What in the world we do before computers?
I don't know. Last step, safety glasses.
Good.
We're going to see flying debris.
Flying debris.
You got
my favorite kind of debris.
Here you go. What's next? I'm just going to cut the part.
Well, that is very, very sophisticated. It would be totally uncool to rearrange these.
Very.
Right. Yeah. There's something creepy about it, Tim.
It is.
After the router finishes cutting, Darnell helps me prep the wood for staining.
All the way in?
Yeah, all the way in.
I think we're running a little low on juice here.
On.
It's not really the most efficient way to go, huh? Uh-oh. Bringing in the big guns?
Yeah, we're bringing in big ones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Push and pull. Okay.
All right, I think I got it.
Good job, Mike.
What do I do now?
Well, see that lady Kathy over there?
She'll tell me what to do.
She'll tell you rest of what to do over there.
People have been telling me what to do all day, Darnell.
Okay.
I don't mind. I kind of like it.
I hear you.
Where do I put this?
Right up here.
All right. Anywhere fine?
Yep. These are chemical resistant.
Because that is a chemical in there. What kind of stain are we looking at?
This is like an oil-based stain.
How do we approach this?
Okay, all you gotta do is, I've got the stain all stirred.
Mm-hmm.
All you gotta do is take that rag, dunk it in.
Yeah.
Get it good and saturated.
Okay.
And then you just wipe it on all over it.
All right.
And no, just...
I can't mess it up, right?
Oh, no.
I mean...
No. Just make sure it's all covered.
How's the stain come out of clothes, okay?
No.
Fine.
I warned you about that first.
You could have. That's okay.
Well, if you're keeping track at home, that's the 28th shirt I've ruined for the greater good of dirty jobs.
What do you think, Kathy?
Looks good. Now the fun part's wiping it all off. Evenly. Without no streaks, no fingerprints.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Now, see what
we
you did over
that,
here?
Sir. What'd I do?
You put your fingerprints in it when you grabbed a hold of it here.
Damn it. Sorry. That is, you know what that is? That is a rookie mistake.
A lot of toxics in this, isn't there?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
This is not the kind of thing you want to smell all day long.
Oh, no. Not really.
Is that why you're laughing all the time?
No.
You sure?
It doesn't affect me.
Doesn't affect me either. I'm fine. Staining.
Now, here is your respirator.
Do I really need to wear it?
Because you should.
I was just starting to enjoy the day. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yep, it's supposed to be able to hold the sides in.
Now, what comes out of here?
This is the sealer. That's good. If you go too much, then you'll get the runs and the sags, and then you got a mess.
Nobody wants the run.
No.
Ever.
So we've stained it. We've sealed it. Our job is done.
Right.
What's next?
What's next is taking the finished parts and putting them together. Something new from something old, put together one piece at a time.
The important thing here, though, is no matter what the part is, they're all well hung.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, there's Mike Rowe, sitting in another great big steamy pile of dirt. Well, think again. Dirt does not stick to a magnet. Metal does. And that's what this is. There's metal everywhere here at Cash's Metal and Scrap Iron. And even though cash might be king out here, metal is money. You ever wonder where the bottoms of broken light bulbs wind up? They wind up here. Winchester 12-gauge casing? Yeah, we got them. Used motor heads off car engines? They wind up here. This is a fascinating device. It's called a... I don't know what it's called, but we got them. Radiators, down to our last 600,000. Look at this. Someone has thrown out a perfectly good dumpster. We've even got the kitchen sink.
Cash's scrapyard processes over 350 million pounds of metal every year, and all of it has to be sorted, weighed, and shipped out. They handle every kind of scrap imaginable, from rusty old railway bridges to gunky aluminum rain gutters, which is where we'll start, sorting through a fresh shipment of the twisted gutters with Agatha Gyrus and Heath McLean.
This is Heath. Heath is the safety director, quality manager here at the plant?
Right. A little bit of everything.
All right. And you brought me to what is this, a conveyor belt?
Yep. This is where we're going to get all the steel out of this.
So we're going to separate steel from aluminum.
Anything other than aluminum guttering or siding, we want to pull out.
Got your magnet?
I got my magnet.
Our tool is our magnet.
I love.
Right. You want to just try and stick it to the pieces as we go? So as you see that it doesn't stick, you're going to pull it off, put it on the belt.
You really got to watch your fellow man here, don't you? Good. Might be sticking there. I think this is good. Good.
Yep.
What the heck is this thing?
That's a piece of aluminum solid. We got to check that. We don't know what that is.
Aluminum solid?
Right.
What do you mean?
It means it's not a piece of guttering. It's a solid piece of aluminum, like a big chunk.
Oh, solid.
Solid.
I thought you said salad.
No, not salad.
I'm like, that's fancy.
Aluminum solid. So we'll check and see what kind of aluminum this is, because maybe this is worth more money.
I forgot I was in St. Louis.
Yeah, right. A little bit of an accent. Right?
There you go.
You want to hold this? I'll get my gun. We've got a gun that we can check that with.
All right.
Shoot it. Right?
He's going to get a gun?
Yeah, he is.
This is a mini sword. This is a spectrograph machine that shoots it and tells me the chemical breakdown of that.
Get out of here.
No. It might be worth like 30 cents more.
How's it work?
It'll burn it. Burn a little hole right on the end of that metal and tell me what it is.
I'm fascinated. Yeah.
You see it burning?
Yeah.
Okay. It tells me it's 7075 or 7050.
I don't know what that means.
That's an alloy of metal. Like, painted aluminum is 3105. Every metal is sold by alloy. There's about 20,000 different types of aluminum. So the more we can separate, the more money we'll make on each type.
Did you just say there are 20,000 different types of aluminum?
Yeah, all different alloys of aluminum.
Amazing. The mini sword.
The mini sword. This is the man.
good looking. Couldn't have sprung for the maxi?
Nope.
It's too daggone big.
Too big, right.
Coming up, every load of aluminum cans has a surprise inside.
Is that a piece of poo?
Gosh, I hope not.
Every week, Cash's Metals sorts about 29,000 pounds of painted aluminum with a market value of roughly $20,000.
It's the bin we just made.
So that's all the aluminum we just unloaded, put on the conveyor belt, and this is what it looks like baled.
Right. Weighs 2,193, with your hand on it, it's 93 pounds.
Sorry about that.
2,189.
2,189 pounds.
Now we'll check it, make sure we didn't miss anything, and hopefully we don't, because once this is compacted together, you can't get anything
What's
on.
This?
Oh. That's our strap. That's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
All right.
Just make sure that there's no steel or any plastic or paper or anything else that might be in it.
Because what kind of nightmare would it be if you found steel?
Man,
you'd have to go pry this out.
Two guys and a crowbar in 15 minutes.
The rain gutters box up very nicely. Some may even call it art.
See the trash? See an extension cord hanging out of it?
But aluminum cans? Well, if this is art, it stinks. Bad.
Why does it stink?
Full of beer, people spit, everything that could be in a can.
It's the spit. See, right. The beer I'm familiar with, but the spit.
No, doesn't smell good, does it?
No. Is that a piece of poo?
Gosh, I hope not. It looks more like a bratwurst. We're in St. Louis. Let's think positive.
So how many of these bales do you hope to complete in a day?
Well, we want to bale up at least two or three trailers. That'll make us about a load of cans, about 40,000 pounds of cans.
The aluminum cans are fed into the compactor, squashed into a giant 1,200-pound cube, and shipped off to beverage makers who melt them down and turn them back into more cans. Without so much of the spit. Once I'm done helping to build this great wall of cans, it's time to meet Oscar Armour. Oscar's spent over 30 years at Cash's, and when it comes to telling nickel from tin or copper from brass, there's nobody better.
This is what we call a magnetic separator. Well, what this does, this separates non-ferrous from ferrous.
I mean, so non-ferrous metal is the stuff that's...
Not magnetic.
Not magnetic.
Right, and ferrous is magnetic.
So is ferrous metal steel?
Exactly.
Or iron?
Right.
Non-ferrous would be aluminum?
Copper, brass, aluminum.
How's it work?
Okay. We have a cranker up here.
And that's where the magnet is?
Right. The magnet's right on there. It's turning. And see the little ridges on it? What it does, it picks it up, carries it back, and drops it.
Gotcha.
And there's the lever right there, Mike.
So this is all operated by?
By foot.
By your foot?
Mm-hmm. Start picking it up.
Oh, yeah. So, right now you're running bullets through here, but you could be running anything.
Right, we run copper, brass. Sometimes we run aluminum over it.
Yeah.
Anything that's mixed, any ferrous that's mixed with non-ferrous, we can separate them right here.
So our bullets are pretty much gone through.
Right.
And all the steel ones have been pulled out.
Exactly.
What else you do here?
Everything that's separated is right here in this room. Okay, this right here is 194 copper punchings.
Uh-huh.
This is copper turnings.
Uh-huh.
Sheet copper.
Sheet copper. All right.
Yellow brass.
This is yellow brass, and that's orange copper. I'm familiar with this.
Right.
All right.
Okay, Mike, what we're going to do now, we're going to run a stripper. Turn that button on there.
We got to get the copper outside
of the shell.
The insulation, I guess, right? All right. What's the best way to get the insulation off?
Okay, you'll run it right through that third hole right there.
One, two, three. This
exactly.
Guy here?
Smallest one. It's razors in there. It's going to cut it. And then once it hit the other side of the box, then you'll just peel the insulation off of it.
Just as simple as sticking it in the hole.
Sticking it in the hole. There you go.
Still on.
Well, you have to peel it off.
Oh, I got to do this. What am I wearing gloves for?
There you go. Huh. Goes there and the copper goes
bad.
Right
this
there.
Is good. Well, that's simple enough.
You're a master stripper now.
A master stripper. Just working my way through college. I don't really strip for a living. It's just something I wanted to experiment with.
All of this copper harvesting is well worth the time. Copper is one of the most valuable metals on the market today. Coming up, my heavy metal handling skills are put to the test.
Uh-oh! Stop! I believe I'm going up in the air!
Out in the yard at Cash's Scrap Metal, big boys with big toys load massive mounds of metal into railroad cars.
That is truly the biggest magnet I've ever seen.
Oh, they come a lot bigger than that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Straight up?
Climb on up.
Lance Spector is a supervisor out here in the yard. He's going to teach me how to use this thing.
Go ahead and pop the door open.
Well, he's going to try anyway.
Man, oh man. When's the last time you cleaned this thing out?
Well, it's a dirty job.
So. Yeah, it is. All right, so my joystick here to the left.
To the left.
Should move us to the left.
Yep. Now lower it at the same time. With
this
that
guy.
One. There you go.
So I'm about to pick up.
If you get a good chunk of that, you'll get about 1,200 pounds.
Really?
Turn the magnet on. Smash it down. There you go. Now just pick it up.
Holy cow, look at that.
Now spin it around. There you go. Lower it.
Wow, very touchy.
Let her go.
I'm dropping her.
Now you just do the same thing over and over again about
wow
900 times a day.
That feels really heavy.
Yep.
I mean, you know, on my little finger.
Some genius named Sturgeon invented the electromagnet way back in 1820. But I doubt that even he foresaw that a guy like me would be using one to toss half a ton of metal into the back of a railway car with the flick of my wrist.
Great.
I tell you what, a good crane operator will pick that big bundle up there and not break the bandit.
Really?
Want to give it a shot?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Magnet on?
Magnet on.
Now just be gentle. Thing starts swinging. Now, when it gets over to the car, that's when you got to break it.
Oh, you mean without demagnetizing it?
Right. Well, what you're gonna do is you're gonna bang it up against the side of the rail car.
Kidding me?
Nope. Give it a good whack. There you go. Okay, now you can let it go. It's already broke. You don't have to break it again.
Gotcha. It's like a surgeon.
Yeah, very delicate process here.
Yeah, like a drunk doctor.
There you go. Pick it up. Like I said, let's try to get most of it in the car.
Okay. Oh, man. You know what? Let me clean that up for you.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Now it's going crazy.
There you go. You're all right. Or drop it from way up there.
I figure gravity's on our side. What do you think of that?
Are you letting everybody know you're coming?
Let's just blow the horn.
Hit the horn.
I didn't know you had a horn.
Oh, yeah.
I got a horn. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you put me as a crane operator at this point?
Oh, that's a tough call. I don't think... sucks registers on a scale of 1 to 10, so...
That's hard, man. You're telling me that suck is not a number.
Suck is not a number.
If at first you don't succeed, try another machine.
Oh, that's awesome. Maybe I'll be better at this one than that other.
I hope so.
That magnet thing. Couldn't be much worse.
Now what you're going to do is you're going to be grabbing one of these beams out of here.
Yeah.
Bringing it around to the pile and cut it up to under 5 foot.
Yep,
grab one of those gray ones first.
This little guy?
Right in front of you, yeah. Pin the boom down. There you go. Foot stick out. Whoa. There you go. Now close it. Pick it up. Slide over to your left. slowly. All right, close it all the way.
You want to snap in half?
Keep going.
That's all there is to it?
That's all there is to it.
This rubble used to be a railway bridge, strong enough to support the weight of locomotives.
Look at that. That's amazing.
Now we're chopping it down to size so it can fit in the back of one of the hopper cars that used to roll across it.
You want to go down a little bit, you can.
Oh, when you say down, you mean the opposite of up.
Well, usually, yeah.
Oh, I got all kinds of goodies there.
There you go. Right. Grab that bad boy. Uh-oh, stop.
I believe I'm going up in the air.
You're not going to get it.
Not going to get it.
It's got too much weight on it.
For crying out loud.
All right, never mind.
No?
Let that one go. You had about probably about 70 to 80 tons sitting on top of that beam, so you're not going to get it.
80 tons?
About.
That's a lot.
Want to pick another beam? Pull it out.
Now, that's a big beam.
That's going to be the biggest one you're going to cut, probably. See if it'll do it. Now squeeze it.
Oh, yeah. You're mine.
Oh.
Stalder.
Oh. Ready?
Fire in the hole.
Okay. Now try it. There you go.
Look at that. I think I got it.
I think you got it.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me ask you a practical question. This is a huge mountain of what used to be a bridge. I mean, how long would it take a good crane operator to go through this whole thing?
Nonstop, going 8 hours a day, probably 2 to 3 days.
2 to 3 days. And from what I've showed you so far, roughly how long?
2 to 3 months.
I got time.
At the end of the day, I finally found a machine I could operate. And a worthy mission.
There it is again.
Finding the director's car keys.
Getting a reading. It's faint. But there's definitely metal here.
There it is again.
Here at Dirty Jobs, we're looking to expand our research department by a few hundred million people. If you have a dirty job or know someone who does, do me a favor, drop us a line at discovery.com/dirty jobs and tell us all about it. If it's dirty enough, we'll come out and do it with you. Appreciate it.
I do love to push buttons.
Oh.
Oh.
Then you gotta,
sometimes I push them too quickly.
Gotta...
Well, here's what I've learned so far. Those are cast iron borings, and they're being dumped right now into empty railway cars. Empty railway cars, I've also learned, weigh approximately 70 pounds.
No! I want so bad to be competent.